My friends, I am Vivian McPeak, and this is Hemp Present. If you've got feedback or would like to suggest a guest or topic for Hemp Present, you can still email me at hemppresent@gmail.com. Moby Grape is an American rock band founded in 1966, part of San Francisco's psychedelic music scene. The band merged elements of rock and roll, folk music, pop, blues, and country. Jerry Miller is the guitarist and a founding member of Moby Grape. The seminal Bay Area rock group still continues to perform occasionally. Rolling Stone included Miller at number 68 on their list of 100 greatest guitarists of all time, and Moby Grape's album, Moby Grape, at number 124 from the magazine's listed 500 greatest albums of all time. I'm excited because I've got Jerry with me today to tell us about his historic musical career. Welcome, Jerry, to Cannabis Radio.
Well, thank you, Vivian. Nice to be here.
Man, thanks for doing this. I'm such a fan. You were born in Tacoma, Washington, and you live here in the Pacific Northwest today. You began your music career in the late 1950s, I believe, with popular Northwest dance rock bands playing and recording, including the Elegants and the Frantics. You contributed guitar work to an early version of the hit record "I Fought the Law" by Bobby Fuller, Bobby Fuller Four, and you toured with Bobby Fuller. What was the Pacific Northwest music scene like back in those days?
Oh, it was really great. It was rock and roll, the Wailers, the Blue Notes, the Frantics, and, all the dance halls, armories, and also later on there was the beautiful clubs. I played at one Oregon Trio club. It was the Hi-Hat, and that was really nice, too. That was when I was playing with an Oregon Trio, and I hadn't played with a lot of other guitar players. But later on, I heard the Birds, and I decided I'd play with other guitar players.
It must have been kind of a
trip.
Go ahead.
Northwest was a very good place to had some really good people I admired on guitar. Rich Dangle from the Wailers, Joe Johansson. He was one of my idols up here. And I love to listen to these guys. They played the big guitars usually, not the Stratocasters much, except Jimi Hendrix did.
And you struck up a friendship with Jimi Hendrix, a Seattle native. And I understand that you and Jimi would hit the club scene here with another guitar player, Larry Coryell, who eventually gained fame with 11th House, helping to establish the jazz fusion genre. And one of the clubs you patronized was the Spanish Castle in Des Moines, which inspired the Jimi Hendrix song, Spanish Castle Magic. What can you tell us that time and those experiences? How did you meet Jimi?
Oh, well, we would go to the different places. They had Birdland on Madison in Seattle, and they had the Tiki. That's where we would go every time we could go catch Jerry Allen, who was kind of like Jimi Hendrix. Early guy, he played a Stratocaster, and he was so nasty. I mean, he was funky guy. He knew funk. And we loved to listen to him. And so we just bump into each other once in a while. You know, we didn't hang out much because I lived in Tacoma. He was over in Seattle. Mm-hmm. But we bounced around a little bit at the clubs and always said hello. And then, of course, at Monterey, we had to say hello.
What did you think when the grunge scene happened and the Pacific Northwest became like a Liverpool or a San Francisco for a while?
I thought it had hair on it. It's pretty ballsy, pretty crunchy. Yeah, grungy, I guess you would say.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so.
That was all right. It was another type of music. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not my cup of tea too much, but
sure, I understand. And there were a lot of live clubs to play at, play original music again, right?
Yeah, youthful stuff at the time.
Right. So before co-founding Moby Grape, you and your bandmate Don Stevenson performed in the Frantics, I think, right?
Yes. And we were in the Frantics.
And the band relocated to San Francisco, and with the addition of Bob Mosley, formed the nucleus of what would become Moby Grape in 1966.
Right.
And you recorded your eponymous first Grape album from March to April of 67. and then went on to open the legendary Monterey Pop Festival later that year. How did you get that
Yeah.
gig? How did you get the gig at Monterey? And is it true that Jerry Garcia suggested y'all move to San Francisco?
No. We were in San Francisco playing as the Frantics. We played the Dragon of Go-Go. And actually, when we first got there, it was on the day that they had the topless was legal. And so we thought we were going to play at the Peppermint Tree. And they didn't need us because they were going to make money off topless. So we ended up playing for the girls. But anyway, yeah, the Garcia, we stopped at this place. We were coming home from, where was it? What's the name of the place? Santa Maria from Hunter's Inn. And we stopped to eat at this place called the Inn Room in Belmont. And the Dead was playing there. It was just a small club. But they had just about to change their name to the Dead from the Warlocks. And they asked us, what you doing here? We said, hey, dig your music. And they said, well, you want to come in and play on a break? So we went in, we did a couple of West Montgomery tunes. And then they said, well, you know, you don't have to go back to Tacoma. We have an empty Victorian here on Ralston Street. So we stayed there. And that's how we ended up in San Francisco.
Wow.
In the Bay Area.
Right.
Yeah.
How did so you
that
get
was
the
great.
Gig?
Yeah, the bar.
How'd you
the
get
bartenders
the gig?
And everybody loved us. So we stayed.
Awesome. How'd you get the gig at Monterey?
That I don't know. It might have been to do with Matthew or Bill Graham. I'm not sure.
Yeah, your first album came out, right? So you guys were starting to make a splash.
Yeah, it was a good seller around the Bay Area for sure.
Jerry, Moby Grape was one of the few psychedelic era bands with three guitarists. I think it was yourself, Peter Lewis, and the late Skip Pence. You were the lead guitarist.
Yep.
Moby Grape was at sometimes referred to as country rock at the time. Who were some of your early musical influences that you tapped when forming your guitar style?
Oh, well, you know, Freddie King, I loved him. I loved those songs, Freddie King, you know. Peter, he really liked Sal, the guy who played with the Loving Spoonful.
Uh-huh.
He liked him. And, you know, and of course I loved Wes Montgomery. That's why I got the L5 Gibson.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't
and
play
you're,
that.
And you're talking about your Gibson L5 CES Florentine guitar, a hollow body semi-acoustic axe that you named Beulah?
Well, you sure know what you're talking about, yeah.
Right?
You betcha.
You've had Beulah since the early 60s, right?
61, yes.
That's a long time to
well,
hang
actually,
on to the same guitar.
Yeah, actually, yeah. Well, it got stolen once when I was listening to Sly and the Family Stone at the Winchester Cathedral. And it was after we played at the Winterland. And our roadie took it in his XKE, so you could see the guitars. You know, you see through that back window. And somebody stole the guitar. So I went through hell to get it back. Started handing out $100 bills till I found that little thief that stole it.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah, but I finally got it. That's actually in the book, the What's Purple and Boats in the Sea, Moby Grape.
Wow.
The whole story of that.
Beulah must feel like an extension of your arm by now, all those years playing the same guitar.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah, I'm sure glad I still have it. I played it last night, man. It was beautiful.
Nice.
I'm playing it tonight, too.
Do you have a gig tonight?
Yes, I do.
Where are you playing?
I'm playing at Sam's. It's called Sam's out in Spanaway.
Nice.
Out south of Tacoma. Yeah, it's beautiful. Beautiful place. all my old buddies show up, and everybody, bikers, everybody, hippies, well, what there is left of them.
There's still a few of us. There's still a few of us, man. I was born in 1958.
Oh, you bet, man. You bet. I love the Peaceniks.
I was born in 58, so I was a little bit young, you know, but I was already a hippie when I was 10. And,
You
you
betcha.
know, I spent, you know, a good portion of my 20s and 30s basically grabbing every old album and studying everything. And
Yeah.
and I'll always go ahead.
It was really a trip to be right in the middle of all that. You know, when I think back on it and I think how lucky I was to be, you know, right there in the middle of all that fun. And,
yeah,
you know,
man.
23 years old and bouncing around in Winterland and Avalon and Fillmore
Yeah, you were in
and
the
on
center
the
of the
road.
cyclone, right? You're really in the center of the cyclone, man.
Absolutely, right in the dead center. And we, you know, we were there in San Francisco in 66. So that was really, really something to be able to be there that early. Actually, 65 is when I think we got there.
Wow.
In the Bay Area. Yeah, it was beautiful.
You know, I'm what Stephen Gaskin, my old friend, used to call a traditional American hippie, right?
All right,
time
great.
To roll out for the people that let us hemp present. Hang loose. We're coming right back.
We're back with Jerry Miller of Moby Grape and Beyond. You know, Jerry, on the first segment, you were talking about, you know, the 1960s San Francisco music scene, and it remains one of the most influential localized musical forces in recent history. And the 60s counterculture has influenced much more than just music. You know, looking back on it, again, as someone who was there and played a part in defining the music of that time, I mean, what does it all mean to you? I mean, the 60s and the music and the message from San Francisco, it rippled out to the entire world, and it's still rippling today. Do you agree?
I do indeed. I think it was just such, the audience was so wonderful. I always attribute the wonderfulness was the people would give everybody a break. I mean, it was just Love City. You know, everybody, you didn't have to worry too much, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of trouble in the world, but right there, we had ideas for progress in the right way.
There's kind of a beautiful innocence, that's been lost. You agree?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's long gone. Well, I mean, there's little pockets of it. You know, San Francisco is very strange now, but you know, there's still pockets. You know, here in Tacoma, and where are you at? You're in Seattle.
I'm in Seattle. I'm in West Seattle.
Yeah, there's a lot of good hippies left.
There are, and you know, the idea of peace and love and understanding and tolerance and compassion and respect for the earth. I mean, it's timeless, right?
Yeah, and being hip, you know, like looking for new music. I still do. I still write and record. Some of my own CDs and stuff. Of course, I love the old 45s and the albums. They all sounded best.
Yeah, yeah. I used to listen to my dad's 78s even, right?
Oh, yeah, 78s were great. I had a whole bunch of Little Richard 78s.
Nice. Well, you know.
Yeah, they really kicked butt.
Looking back, Jerry, Moby Grape fell apart in 1970, and you performed with the Rhythm Dukes, I think, for a couple of years. But you went on to share
that
the
was me.
Stage. Go ahead.
Oh, I see. That was me and Bill Champlin was in that. He's with Chicago now.
Right. And I told you before the show that I interviewed Terry Hegarty from Sons of Champlin not long ago, actually, on this show. You went on, though, Jerry, to share the stage with the likes of Jimi Hendrix, Eric Clapton, B.B. King, The Doors. And I read that your admirers include Jimmy Page, Stephen Stills, David Crosby, Taj Mahal, David Frick, Eric Clapton, and Robert Plant. And Eric Clapton called you the best guitar player in the world when he first came to the U.S. And Robert Plant cites you as a major influence for Led Zeppelin, and Led Zeppelin even played a Moby Grape.
Save big during Labor Day at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances. Plus, buy more to get up to an additional 20% off. Shop even more savings with three Stay-Green 1-cubic-foot vegetable and flower garden soil bags for $10. This Labor Day, take care of your home for less at Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/3. Soil offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Grape song, a couple of Moby Grape songs at its very first rehearsal. What was it like when you heard that Eric Clapton thought you were the best guitar player in the world?
Oh man, I could have fell over. I couldn't believe it because he's my number one too. I mean, we played those Freddie King songs, like I mentioned. We both played those kind of very similar because he was a lot of fun, Freddie King. Of course, when I met him, he wasn't in a good mood. But yeah, that was just hit the floor, man, when I heard Eric said that. I said, how can that be? But I'm very flattered and very honored to hear that, you know. Pretty cool. And all of those people, that's quite an honor to get those accolades from those high rollers.
I guess so, man. I guess so.
Yeah.
You still...
Yeah, Stephen Stills and Robert, they're good friends. I go see him every chance I get. I haven't talked to Stephen in a while, but I got to give him a call.
Nice,
Mr.
nice.
Mr. Stills.
Yeah, I mean, you know, of course, contributed some of the greatest music of all time as well, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they're all getting up there in age now.
You know, you still gig regularly, as you mentioned, and the music industry has changed so much since you started recording in the 1950s. It's just a different world. Is there any newer or recent music that's coming out today that excites you? And what do you think of the music industry today?
Oh, it's just so ridiculous. I mean, you got Beyonce and Taylor Swift making $1 billion on a tour. This is insane. I mean, they're good looking and they make music, but doggone it, the price of rice is ridiculous.
Yeah, it's really changed. And the music's in touring and touring and merch now, right? You can't really get
rich man.
Recording.
You ain't kidding. That's just ridiculous. I mean, I play a gig at, you know, get $100. Somebody gets $1 billion. That's ridiculous.
My son's a bass player here in Seattle.
Is that right?
And yeah. And he's been complaining to me lately, man, that, you know, it's hard. There's no gigs. You know, there's no gigs to play anywhere anymore. It's very hard.
No. Yeah. And you can't really afford, you know, unless you're rich to get any good position at one of the really nice concerts, you know, like Rod Stewart, and all of those, the ticket prices are out.
You could pay you could play $4,000 just to get a good seat.
Yeah, ain't that ridiculous?
Yeah, it's all ridiculous. Absolutely, man.
Yeah,
no doubt about it.
If you want to, like a regular working man wants to take his kids to a baseball game or a concert to see some of that stuff, he better be rich.
But I have heard on some good sources that you can still catch Jerry Miller for a pretty good price.
You betcha. And that's good. I mean, I'm happier in the pig and poop, you know?
Yeah, man. Yeah.
I get to play and quite regular, and I forget the blues. Just get out that guitar and have a lot of fun with good friends and play new songs and old songs. Reminisce, shoot the do. A lot of fun. I still talk to my old great buddies too.
Really?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Talk to Don quite a bit. He become a Canadian, you know. Don
not
Stevenson.
I've considered that myself, if possible.
Yeah. Pretty nice, he tells me. Yeah.
Nice. Excellent.
Yeah.
So So you were born and raised in Tacoma, and you're still in Tacoma.
Well, I came back after all them years. I was, you know, about 30 years in Santa Cruz and, you know, San Francisco and Santa Cruz, California. And then I said, this is just a bit crazy. So let's go back home and see the dad, see the brother, see the mom, hang out, relax a little, because it's a beautiful place here.
Oh, it is. It is, man. I was born and raised in California myself. And then I came up and went to Ballard High in 74. And I came back.
Yeah. Don went to Ballard.
Nice.
No, Don went to Garfield. Don went to Garfield, I think. Yeah.
Nice, nice. Yeah, one of my sons went to Garfield. Yeah. I was playing in a band in California, and my band broke up. And I came back up here in 86. I've been here ever since. California is just not what it used to be. It's everything has changed so much. Do you agree?
Oh, yes, indeed I do. Yeah, it's just not the same at all. No, it wasn't going to stay. L.A. was never the same. It's always changing like crazy. But San Francisco is really yuppified, and you got to be rich, and there's just all huge, tall buildings, and the old ones are just falling apart.
A tremendous gentrification in San Francisco, and you have tremendous wealth, and then a stunning homeless population in the same place, right?
Yeah, and really hard on homeless, really hard.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah. They won't let them have a bathroom, and they won't let them do their thing outside. So it's tough.
It's tough. Yeah, it's tough everywhere these days.
Yeah, I know.
And
it's, you know, everywhere.
You saw San Francisco in really what might be called its glory days, right?
You betcha. Absolutely. It was beautiful. You walk down the street, see somebody, and they say, hey, come on in, let's listen to some Otis Redding. Get the new Otis Redding, Otis Blue. And we got some new Gabor Szabo. Or you can go down to North Beach and see all this crazy stuff and all these people doing their thing. You know, it's really cool. Everybody's up to something. And there was one guy played the void harp in San Francisco, and he'd sit down, listen to have a couple of tokes and sit down and listen to that. Say, whoa, man, a big metal thing with strings on it.
crazy.
It was funny.
Gary, we're gonna go to another break and then come back for our final segment.
Okay, my man.
All right, my brother. One second.
Sounds great. Okay.
All right, man. It's really cool. It's really cool talking to you, man. So this next segment will only be about 5.5 minutes long. It'll be about half as long as the previous segments. It's just going. It's going spectacular. I'm so honored to have you on my show and get your message out. You know, I got listeners on 4 or 5 continents, and and we'll get the message out, man.
How about that? Hey, thanks for thinking of me, Vivian.
Oh, man, of course, man. I've been, like I said, I've been a fan of yours my whole adult life, you know, since I was,
well,
got
one
my
of
first...
these days.
Go ahead.
I'll be playing up there, Seattle, coming up not too long from now.
Yeah, so, absolutely. And, you know, I produced the Hemp Fest for 28 years, the Seattle Hemp Fest.
Beautiful.
And I was talking about David, but maybe we can do some kind of a cool event, you know, a peace love event or something, you know.
That'd be great.
And get the grape on there, man. Okay, well, 10 seconds of silence. We're going to come back for our last segment.
Time to roll out for the people that let us hemp present. Hang loose. We're coming right back.
We're back for our final segment with Jerry Miller, legendary guitar player. Jerry, you were talking about, you know, somebody would say, hey, man, you know, let's come on in, you know, let's hang out and listen to the latest Otis Redding album. I mean, that's in the days of record albums, right? Where you would sit down while you're listening to the music and you would hold that album in your hand and you'd be reading all the liner notes and looking at the album cover and reading about the band on the back and looking at their pictures and stuff, right?
Yeah. Waiting for the next Beatle album.
And
you see what's on the cover.
Hang out at the record store for hours and flipping through
all
the
records,
right? Looking at all the covers.
Yeah.
and the displays and everything, right? It's
right on.
Different world, right? I remember, you know, even growing up with my dad, I would sit and I would look at the records and pull the sleeves out, right? And they had, you know, all the other albums for sale inside the sleeve and all the liner notes and stuff. And it's not the same with digital music, is it?
No, it isn't. It is not. No, it was such a delight. So much different. They have the nice big old vinyl album and the pictures. You wait, anticipate, like Rubber Soul, Beatles, Revolver, Rolling Stones, B.B. King, went to new B.B. King, and then rooting up all the old blues stuff was great, too.
And do you ever have any listening parties?
Every night, every day, listen all the time. I have my collection of albums right here. I'm looking at.
Who you been all listening stacked to up. Lately?
Let me see. Well, let me see what have I got. Let's see, what is this here? This here is Steely Dan.
Nice.
My friend, he played with Steely Dan. Well, a bunch of my friends played with Steely Dan. You know,
that Baxter, can't buy Jeff a thrill, Baxter. Can't Buy a Thrill album.
Yeah.
That was just, every song was a hit. Every song was amazing. That changed my life.
Yeah. This is Katie Lied. Let's see what else we got here. What else? Oh, there's Steve Mann. Now, he is a cool guy. He played on the first Sonny and Cher stuff with a 12-string.
Nice.
He was a great friend. Him, and he introduced me to Dr. John, who was Mac Rabinac at that time.
The Night Tripper.
And, yeah, he'd always been a good friend. And of course, Taj Mahal, we played together. And I go over there and see them at Demetrius Jazz Alley from time to time.
Wow.
I imagine you go over there too, right?
Yes, yeah, I've seen some great shows there.
Yeah, me too. It's at McCoy Cobham. Diner. Yeah, Les McCann.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I bet that was a killer.
Oh, man. Yeah, he's the man.
He is the man. Yeah, him and McLaughlin, too.
Mahavishnu Orchestra. Yes, man. Wow.
Outrageous. What a genius.
Changed my life. I mean, that's Larry Coryell.
Yeah, me too.
Larry Coryell was one of their contemporaries, right?
Yeah, Larry. We pelled around in New York, and we pelled around, of course, up here. I used to go see him almost every chance I could. There was a place up here, the Birdland, where Larry would play with the Dynamics.
Yes, Birdland. Yeah. Yes, absolutely, man. I recall.
Yeah.
Very impressive.
That's where everybody was welcome. Black, white, and whatever you wanted. You know, and it goes, at that time, some of the people nuts. Oh, these guys are all getting together. Our daughters are going to get taken away.
You know, Jerry, our time is winding down. There was a hope. Okay. There was optimism in the 1960s. Many of us believe that we are on the verge of a new dawn, you know, a new time of consciousness and enlightenment. Peace and love became global values and ideals to embody. The youth of today might find reasons to feel despair. Are you hopeful that it's possible there could be another 60s?
Well, it is possible. It's hanging on a thread. And, you know, if we just stop this stupid-ass killing and ignoring and no truth-telling. I mean, there's lying and everything is permissible, it seems. Nobody gets called on their filthy, nasty ideas. You know?
Yeah.
Politicians and warmongers. Crazy. That scares the shit out of me. But I'm hopeful.
I'm hopeful too, man. And we need to bring peace and love back by popular demand. Jerry, our time is up. Jerry Miller of Moby Grape and other great musical acts. You know, thank you for your contributions. It's been such a blast talking to you, my bro.
Thank you very much, Vivian. And it's nice to see you, a good interviewer.
Thank you, sir. Well, maybe we'll have
you're
you back.
You're welcome, buddy.
I'll come out and see
Take
you
care.
soon, man.
Oh, okay. And Joe says, don't hang up. Okay. I won't
That
hang up.
Concludes this
okay,
installment of
buddy.
Hemp Present. All right. Love you, brother. We'll talk to you in a minute.
Love you too, pal. Okay. Bye-bye.
The Hemp Present intro music is 7 Mile Beach by Joanne Rand, and the outro music is Take Back the Plant by Stickerbush. Let's get some peace and love happening, man, because we can do it. See you next time. Stay strong. Marijuana. THC. Sweet sativa.